Hello and welcome along to Paper Talk Extra, the Irish Examiner's dedicated sports podcast with Peter McNamara. Today I'm joined by Mikey Sheehan, Stephen Barry and Rob McNamara to discuss Ireland's heroics in Cardiff, the progression of Munster-based clubs in the Airtricity League this season, and later on we will look ahead to the Champions Cup in rugby. But we're going to begin today by discussing Ireland in Cardiff on Monday night and the implications of reaching a playoff for the World Cup. Mikey Sheehan, you were here last week and you said, in fairness to you, that Ireland could pull it off. Myself, Rob and Steve, well certainly myself and Rob, were less confident. So, go on, you can brag away.
No, I think I've done enough bragging now over the last few days. Ireland played to their strengths. Absolutely played to their strengths. We spoke about this last week. If Ireland played to their strengths, they would have a chance. If they tried to become something that they're absolutely not and that everybody seems to want them to be, then we won't be in the position that we find ourselves in now. If we were trying to play the ball through the lines, like Wales tried for the first 20 minutes, I think Wales would have picked us apart. We played to our strengths. It's a long ball team, play to that. And I think Murphy's introduction into the team, he ran all night. He didn't get a sniff of goal, but he ran all night. And he was supported by five big, powerful men in midfield. Not the greatest passing team, but who cares? We're where we would have taken at the start of the campaign. So all this clamour for having Wes Hoolan in the team and, you know, Callum O'Dowda and all this kind of stuff. No, we went back to the basics of what Ireland can do and what will get us where we got to. You know, every time that we've got a big result, whether it was against Germany last year, Bosnia in the playoffs, Italy during the European Championships, and again here against Wales, like, yeah, four big victories by playing the way that Ireland should be playing. Rather than this Wes Hoolan playing through the lines, playing it down the channels, you know. In fairness, Shane Long runs all day and he kind of got the same, but he's just not a finisher. And his record over the last 45, 50 games proves that. I think it's only one or two, the odd goal in those games. Like, that's not good enough. Somebody who's scoring, whether it be at the championship level, it is actually a better option with the way we play. And that was seen against Macedonia and what he also provided to us on Monday night. I must say, though, and I mentioned it here last week, I was on about leaders, and I was saying that we had lacked leaders throughout the campaign. And it's the one I did mention on last week was Shane Duffy, who was immense on Monday night, and he was our leader. But he was backed up by a person who hadn't been that prominent in the Irish team up until the last two games, and David Myler. So now you had a leader in centre half, you had a leader in the centre midfield, and everyone else worked around it. Now this isn't all positive. What if Ireland hadn't scored in the 54th minute? Was there an opportunity in the first 54 minutes before that? You know, if we didn't get that break, the poor clearance from Ashley Williams, the poor play from Ben Davis, you know, we could have been looking ahead 0-0 because it really didn't look like Ireland were going to score. But what we have been absolutely brilliant at is taking our chance. And I say this nearly in the singular, because against Germany, we got one chance. Against Italy, apart from Hoolan, we got a minute where we had two chances. Against Wales, we had one chance. We took them every time. And that's economy at its best. I huge credit to Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane on this. I know there was people, you know, also looking for them not to be renewed. They got the contracts. I wouldn't have done it that way, I'll say that. But I think it's been justified.
Stephen, one element of Monday night's game that probably in hindsight has been overlooked in the fact that everyone's so happy with the result from an Irish perspective, is basically Joe Allen went off injured. Himself and Ramsey, we were here watching the match Monday night, himself and Ramsey, were fairly dominant around the middle. How much of an influence in the game did that have, Wales losing Joe Allen?
Yeah, I think it was a big influence, all right. You saw, I suppose, the composure that they had on the ball in the first 20 minutes, that they were dominant and they looked it was one-way traffic. They looked like they were the only team that looked like even creating a chance for long periods of that game. And I suppose when they missed Allen, it took away that kind of leader in the area of the field like David Myler was for Ireland. And they had to withdraw Ramsey back along the field as well, which kind of took away an attacking outlet. And Chris Coleman seemed to make a poor change there as well. It didn't really compensate for the loss. But I mean, it was typical in a way of the way Ireland did it. It was about passion. There was a lot of hard tackles and it was sort of put him under pressure stuff that I suppose has historically been linked with Irish football for decades now. And it's not necessarily pretty, and it did come down ultimately to one chance, which, you know, may not have reflected the general play for much of the game. But I suppose the one given you can take from this team is that they have a reaction and they can dig out results when things are going against them. After poor performances against Scotland in the Euros qualifying, beating Germany, coming back after being hammered by Belgium to get a result against a weakened Italy side, and coming back to win the two games this week after poor performances against Georgia and Serbia. So it wasn't necessarily attractive, but in the end it's effective, and I mean, it was a brilliant occasion, and it gives us two more brilliant occasions at least to look forward to.
Rob, those two occasions will be against either Italy, Croatia, Denmark or Switzerland with a draw on Tuesday. Generally, people around the country are suggesting that the best case scenario would be to get Denmark, who in themselves are obviously no pushovers, to be fair. Where do you lay? Where do you sit on that?
There are definitely no mugs in that draw. In fairness, when you look at it, there's dangerous teams all over the place there. I mean, nobody wants to get Italy. Denmark would probably be the.
Were you surprised, sorry, that Liam Brady suggested that Italy would not want to face Ireland?
Not really, no. Because, I mean, you know, the Italian game is much slower than the game in Britain and Ireland. We play at a much faster tempo than they do. So, I mean, there is an opportunity there to be exploited. But you have to understand, and Liam Brady should know this, the fact that he played in Italy for so long and has so much experience in that country. Technically, they're much, much better players. And tactically, they're much more informed than Irish players. No matter who we get, it's going to be very difficult. And, you know, I mean, look, I was very negative about Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane last week, and you know, fantastic, they got the result on Monday night, and you know, plaudits to them, but it's only job half done. I mean, why we're celebrating like we're in the World Cup is beyond me. Like, the reaction of the players after the match, I presume, was one of relief rather than celebration, because they were out on the pitch, they were jumping up and down. Roy Keane was hugging Martin O'Neill, and you know, I mean, yeah, okay, it was a good result, but I mean, calm down a small bit. Like, I mean, we still have to navigate this playoff, and we're by no means there. Like, I mean, there's some very, very dangerous teams in there. All teams that are probably technically, with the exception of Denmark, probably technically better than us and tactically better than us. So, you know, while it was, you know, a good night, it certainly wasn't a great night. I wouldn't put it down, you know, in the pantheon of great nights alongside, you know, Kevin Sheedy's goal in Italian 90 against England, or, you know, knocking Romania out in Italian 90, or, you know, beating Italy in World Cup 94, you know. There's still an awful lot of work to be done, and people are really forgetting about that.
Mikey?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Rob here on this one. The job is, I won't even say half done. These four teams in the seeded teams, I think they'll fancy playing Ireland. I think they'll have a look at the Ireland team and kind of say, what have we got to be scared of here? They will obviously know about our heart, our passion, our hard work, but they'll say, look, cut to the chase, an opportunity to get the World Cup in Russia, and we have to go out and beat Republic of Ireland. You know, this team who are ranked X in the world, who don't have any superstar in their ranks. You know, if you look at Denmark, Christian Eriksen, you know, alone, he's far superior than anything we've got, and it is a game changer. And one moment of magic, they score. I think, like, you know, concede a goal, I think Ireland in trouble. It's when we don't concede that we have the opportunity. All these teams, you're looking at Croatia with Modric, and Denmark with Eriksen, Italy with what they can produce. If they score a goal against us, I think we're in trouble, either home or away, you know, meaning that we need to score twice over two legs against a superior opposition. But look, the thing with the Ireland, and I think it's an acceptance that we have to have here now in this country, we started to become a small bit like some of the English fans, right? And if you look at the English qualifying record, and I'm not going to get into this
very long, right? Just for the record, folks, Rob is going to get up and leave the room.
Right? No, no. I think they have 8 wins, 2 draws, and conceded 3 goals in qualifying. Is anyone there happy? Judging by it, no. They walked away with their group. No one is happy. Because there is still this want in England to play like Spain. They can't accept that they're limited by what they have. And they should be playing to that strength. And they topped the group by playing to that strength. Not pretty, I'll give you that. But like in Ireland, I think we just have to accept that this is the group of players that we have. And I would be critical of James McLean in terms of what he can... The amount of loose tackles, we'll call it. The amount of times he gives away the ball. The amount of headless running. And I'll invite Rob in this conversation. But he comes up with these moments that have got us to where we are today. And like Rob, I know you're probably going to disagree with some of that, but I think that the acceptance of it is a big thing here. And I think after the weekend, Roy and Martin have proved that this is what we're good at. These are our strengths. This is what we should stick to. This is why we should be given the contract. Yes, we're bringing in players behind, but they're not. Some of those aren't ready for it yet. And this is what we go with.
I know I've been extremely, extremely negative about Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, and I still think a lot of the criticism that I have been giving them is justified. But on Monday night, as Mikey has said, we played to our strengths, and it was the first time in Martin O'Neill's tenure that I really saw that he trusted the players on the night. He said, you know, these are the players that I have. This is the system I'm going to play. I have to trust the players that they're going to carry out my instructions. You look at that team and, you know, you think, you know, there are no superstars in there. Correct, there are no superstars in there. But there are leaders emerging in that team. Shane Duffy, you mentioned already, Mikey had a superb performance. James McLean, who, you know, from time to time does lose the rag a small bit and will come in with these, you know, ridiculous tackles which get him into trouble, but you know, he does come up with moments. The passion is absolutely oozing out of him. Jeff Hendrick, who's been on the scene for a while now, I thought the way he won the ball and got into the box for the goal was absolutely superb.
We shouldn't be surprised by that though, because he had a really good Euros and he got injured after that, which didn't help.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that these players have now been around the international scene for a while. You know, maybe they're not quite in the same league as the Damien Duffs and the Robbie Keanes and the players that we've had before, but there are leaders in the team, guys who know what it takes to play international football. Even going back to Darren Randolph and goals now, who for me has been
brilliant,
faultless in his qualifying campaign, and is not getting a game for his club, you know. There is positivity going forward, and if Martin O'Neill can continue to trust the players in the same way, and as Mikey said, play to our strengths, you know, forget about trying to play the
through
same
the
way
lines
that the continental teams play through the lines and stuff. You know, we will get results if we go back to that Jack Charlton put him under pressure kind of vibe, you know. We will get the results from that.
Yeah, I mean, long term you'd like to see, I suppose, a more expansive style, but definitely I think in this O'Neill tenure, I mean, it's been the way he's gone about it. He's picked big sides that I suppose Gordon Strachan listening to him would be jealous of. Like the likes of Shane Duffy was a huge leader there, and I don't think we should have too much of a go at the players either for celebrating on the night, because it was, I mean, for the group and in the context of the games that went before it, it was a huge win. And even in the context of getting out of the pool when Ireland would have been seeded, what, third coming into it, it still is a big achievement to, I suppose, surpass Wales, a team who were ultimately in the semi-finals of the Euros last summer. So, and I think morale is a big thing in that team as well, because they are a team that is limited when you look at the stars that some of our opponents have. I know, Mike, you mentioned Christian Eriksen, who could come up against Luka Modric, the likes of the players that our potential opponents in the next round have. So I think the spirit and the togetherness in the team, and even to involve the fans with it in Cardiff the last night, was an important part of the night, and it added to the night, I felt.
I'm going to go around the table, so lads, and look, Mikey, if you had a preference for any team out of a draw on Tuesday, who would you take?
I would probably... I'd be looking at Denmark or Italy. I think Switzerland have taken this approach where they get their teams ready for the big games. I don't think they play too many challenger or friendly matches, as they call them, anymore. They get ready for their big games. Now, they lost away in Portugal the other night, but they're up to that. They were undefeated up until that in a tricky group.
In fact, they won every game.
Yeah, and Croatia just seemed to have a small bit of a meltdown against Finland the week before. A few dodgy results, but like the
quality. I think you could put that down to the fact that their manager, we were discussing this the other day, the manager got the bullet before the Ukraine game, so obviously there was a bit of hassle there.
There was, and that, like, when you look at the players like Perisic, Mandzukic, Modric, like, just to name three off the top, Rakitic, you know, these are playing at the highest level in Europe, so I'd be trying to avoid Croatia and Switzerland. I think Italy, they're our bogey team, the opposite way around, sorry, but Denmark or Italy are the two you'd want to take, and I'd have no fear with the way that this Irish team gets themselves ready for the big games, going into any of those two encounters.
Dave?
I'd take Denmark. I mean, I think they lost to Montenegro at home during the group. They weren't all that convincing in their own group. And I didn't see Switzerland now the last night, but I heard even though they were 9 out of 9 before that, they weren't particularly impressive against Portugal, so I mean, I wouldn't mind them either. Croatia and Italy would be, I think, a tough draws, but really Ireland could have a go at any of them, but definitely Denmark or Switzerland I'd be looking at.
It has to be Denmark. For me, Croatia...
Would you go far saying if it isn't, we don't have a chance?
No, I wouldn't. I think if we draw Croatia, then we're probably as good as out, because they have so many match winners. I said,
their technical ability would destroy it.
As I said, you know, Italy as well, you know, they know how to qualify for big tournaments. They know, their players know all about big occasions. Switzerland are up and coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Denmark is probably the one, the country that's closest to us in terms of style of football. And if we can nullify Christian Eriksen, then maybe we have a chance.
Yeah.
Moving on from the discussion on Ireland and Martin O'Neill's team heading into the playoff for World Cup 2018, we're going to discuss the Munster-based clubs in the Airtricity League and the progression and the development of those four particular clubs, particularly this season. Cork City, of course, on the verge, as we speak on Thursday, of winning the Premier Division, and Waterford already have First Division sewn up. We're going to begin by talking about City. Stephen, Cork City, this is Thursday, obviously. They're playing Bohemians on Friday night and Derry again on Monday night. You would imagine by the end of Monday night's game, Turner's Cross, they would surely have the league wrapped up by that stage. Try and quantify that achievement by John Caulfield's side. Or is it something they really should have been doing, given that they've been knocking on the door now for a number of years?
Well, I suppose the consistency they've showed in the last number of years has been a big tribute to Caulfield's management, because he came in and they were a mid-table side. And to put, I suppose, second places to a good Dundalk team back-to-back for 3 years in a row, it shows he's had good recruitment. And I suppose the thing you can always rely on in Cork is that you have good players coming through locally. So to have that mix, it's worked out very well this year. And just adding in, I suppose, ultimately, you have to mention very early the influence of Sean Maguire in that unbeaten 22-game run to start the season. I mean, it was close to record-setting stuff.
It's incredible that he's still the top scorer in the league, even though he's gone now for some time.
I think he's 4 goals ahead with Dundalk of 3 games remaining for Dave McMillan to catch him, so he still looks like he's going to be top scorer. And I mean, he's left an absence, or it's been, I suppose, a lack of a presence there since he's left, because I looked at the form table for the 8 games after he's gone, and City are 9th for the last 8 games in the form table. They've picked up 10 points, I think, over 8 games, which... I know they've had cup runs in the middle of that too, but it says a lot about, I suppose, their struggles to kind of fill his position. And they still have an exciting attack now that Stephen Dooley's back in there, Carl Shepherd leading the line, and Kieran Sadler as well, who hasn't been a like-for-like replacement, but has definitely brought something to the team. So they still have that threat, and we saw in the game against Dundalk, where it looked like they would secure the league, how impressive they were for the first half, definitely. And they dominated that game. They dominated all over the field. They created chances, but just nothing that clear-cut. And you saw even the goal itself was, in the end, put in the net by a Dundalk defender. So I suppose looking ahead, even if we... I don't want to look too far ahead, because they still have to secure that title, but I suppose in the off-season there will be a bit of work to be done there. But it has been a phenomenal season. and fantastic memories for City fans. And I suppose in the context of winning the league, you have to look at how rarely the club has won it since they were formed in 1984. I mean, twice in the 30 odd years since then. So it's a great achievement, and to be in a cup final as well on top of that.
Rob, I want to ask you, obviously, as a Limerick man and a big Limerick supporter, a big League of Ireland supporter, I think it's very important to acknowledge, as kind of someone that's been down the cross a few times living in Cork now, there's one particular player for me in the League of Ireland this year that has been absolutely amazing, and that's McCormack in midfield for Cork City.
Yeah, but if you look at the Cork City squad, they appear to have backup all over the place. I mean, Maguire left, and I know the goals have dried up slightly.
Well, City, just to put it into perspective, before they played Bowes in this league game on Friday night, they scored 64 times, and he's got a third of those goals, just under a third of those goals.
I mean, they've been grinding out 1-0 wins, you know, 2-0 wins since he left, and have lost a couple of games as well. But they seem to have someone to come in basically in every, you know, position on the pitch to replace guys that are injured or guys that have moved on. And for me, it just looks like, I mean, you were saying there maybe Cork should have achieved more over the last couple of years because they've been knocking on the door. But you have to remember that they were behind Dundalk, and Dundalk had the European money coming in as well, you know. And Cork are going to get their hands on the big bucks with the Champions League qualifying stages. You know, Turner's Cross is by far and away the best ground in the league. It's full practically, you know, every second week, besides the FAI Cup semi-final when we came down with Limerick and there didn't seem to be any Cork fans there at all. But you know, I think the club is really, really well run. They've got, you know, they've got a manager in place who knows where he wants to go. He seems to have a plan in his head. They play exciting attacking football, which they haven't always played under John Caulfield, but they're really set up in future years to go on and dominate Irish football. It's whether, you know, any of the Dublin clubs can keep pace now with Dundalk and Cork. I think it'll be those two battling it out for the next few years.
And the great thing as well is it's built on kind of young local talent. I know you mentioned McCormack in midfield, who's been sensational, probably player of the season if you take out Maguire being missing for the second half. But in there, with him in midfield, like Gary Buckley, Garrod Morrissey, who would have come through with the club, even you look at when Kevin O'Connor departed at left back, to have Shane Griffin coming in there. I know in that Limerick Cup semi-final, another Cork youth product, Chidozie Ogbene, who's gone to Limerick, he was marked very tightly by Conor McCarthy, who's another great up-and-coming player who hasn't got a lot of starts this season. And you have Ryan Delaney coming in there as well, obviously, on loan, who's been crucial too. But it's great to see the club is, I suppose, built on a lot of talent from around the county and around the south of Ireland too. And that helps for sustainability, I suppose, going into the future.
Yeah, and look, I'm not going taking over at the interview route here, lads, but 2 years are well-versed in your League of Ireland soccer. And two things I'd like to just maybe flesh out with you guys is, how does Cork, possibly as a city, but definitely the club, capitalise on this success, one? And number two, we want to always improve the League of Ireland, and we want to see a lot more players coming through into the national side and go on play across over in the UK. We don't see that too often, but it's quite obvious that, like, let's say Sean Maguire is well able for the Championship and the upper echelons of the Championship. How come there isn't many more link-ups with cross-channel clubs in terms of them sending players over here to learn their trade? Now, obviously limited to two or three players, because you don't want to be ruling out these Cork players that are coming through and them not getting an opportunity. But if you had a link up with maybe some of the lower Premiership clubs or the top Championship clubs, sending players over here, learning their trade, staying here for a year, and then going back with what they've learned and getting 20 or 30 league games under their belt, how come that, I suppose, structure isn't there at the moment? And is it something that could be actually worked on?
I suppose that mainly comes from the English club's end of things, because it's not something they really would need to do, given like Shawny Maguire would have gone abroad for 150,000 roughly is what is considered. So, and that would be probably relatively a high price for a League of Ireland player going abroad. So I suppose financially English clubs wouldn't really need to take that step in order to be able to profit off of League of Ireland clubs.
I suppose not even profit, but it's the using the loan system. We see Chelsea have loaned out
or is it the English players think that their youth system and their under 17 or under 19 or under 21 system works better for them rather than sending them out to an Irish club for getting competitive action?
Well, generally even the clubs in England would see playing in League 1 and League 2 is probably a better hunting ground for the players than it would be in League of Ireland, even though the likes of Dundalk and City now going forward have been representing the country here in the Champions League and that they've gained a bit of experience there. But there would still be, I would imagine, snobbery is probably a strong word, but a kind of a...
Do they look down on the league?
I'm not sure, it's very hard to say look down on it, but they probably don't see it as advantageous to send a player over here when you can just send them down the road to Scarab or whatever, you know.
Mikey, you said there about how do Cork capitalise on the success. I really do think that, you know, it's such a well run club. There's a lot of volunteerism that goes on around it. I think the club is exceeding expectations, and so are Dundalk. I mean, you look at the performances that Dundalk put in Europe last season, and they were absolutely superb. Where does further growth come from? Further growth comes from the FAI, and the only way that can come is from investment. In terms of English people in England knowing about, you know, the League of Ireland, they just don't know about it because it's not promoted enough. Limerick have had quite a few British managers come in over the last few years. Stu Taylor, who was lucky enough to interview a good few times, and I sat down with him. And he didn't know about Irish football. He was asking me about Irish football, you know. He didn't know the ins and outs of how things work. And Neil MacDonald has come in now as well at Limerick, a former Oldham player, you know, heavily linked with Joe Royle throughout his career. And he had no idea about Irish football before he came here, because it's not on TV. It's not promoted. You don't see it. And I think the first time that English people really became aware of Irish football was when Shamrock Rovers played Spurs in the Europa League a few years ago, and then we had Dundalk and their success last year. So it comes down to investment from the FAI and possibly from the government as well. But the League of Ireland is a fantastic league. Don't let anybody tell you any different. And there's some real, real quality players coming out of it. And if we put money into it, we could have an absolutely fantastic product here. We really could.
And that was the reason I asked those two questions. I think they're intrinsically linked to investment at grassroots level by the FAI, as well as promotion of the game.
Well, it's not really even at grassroots level, though, because they do put money into grassroots level. They just don't seem to put enough into the actual senior clubs in the country.
But there doesn't seem
to be any... But when you have John Delaney earning more money than the prize money for the League of Ireland winners, there's something wrong there.
I think that's another topic of conversation. I think the promotion of the game needs to improve to get it to the level. You take GAA, for example, right? And I'm not going to... opens up a big can of worms. GAA isn't played over in the UK, but it's available on the screens every Saturday and Sunday through Sky Sports.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It is hard to know, too, where to go. Or I've struggled with some of these kind of general League of Ireland discussions, because I know we're going to mention Cove in the conversation, but I saw, I think they had their biggest game of the season, and their manager Stephen Henderson was tweeting that they had less than 200 there for their biggest game, and he said we must be doing something drastically wrong, even though I know Cove's promotion would be good. So it can just be a struggle sometimes, even though they've had success this year too. And it is tough to know where to go with it, bar just building up your base like Cork have, and trying to, I suppose, build a club that isn't built on bringing in players, it's built on having a good local core, and to try and bring in people that way through the turnstiles.
Rob, as we mentioned, you're a big Limerick fan. You go to a lot of the games, home and away. Can Limerick, Waterford and Cove, like we're going to discuss all the clubs, the four clubs, and can the other three clubs who are in obviously not as far down the developmental road as Cork City are, can they learn from City and the way they run the club?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think Limerick are probably a lot further down the road than Cove and Waterford are. There's massive potential in Waterford. Maybe not so much Cove, because they're battling with Cork City for basically bums on seats. But in terms of Limerick, I think there's a lot of great stuff going on in Limerick. We have an absolutely superb owner, and Pat O'Sullivan has put a lot of his own money into the club. We're back at the markets. You know, after years of kind of meandering around the place, we were at Thomond Park and Jackman Park, and, you know, I remember standing on the the terrace in Jackman Park and thinking, you know, will we ever get out of here? You know, will we ever get out of this amateur ground? And will the club ever move on? You know, stuck in the first division for well over 20 years, you know. And since we have come back, it's been a bit of a yo-yo. I mean, I always say that being a Limerick fan is never easy, but it's always enjoyable. You know, we had Stuart Taylor in as manager, and, you know, I don't know what happened really, because things seemed to be going swimmingly, and then all of a sudden he was gone, you know. Martin Russell came in then, and he tried to impose this kind of Barcelona-style football on us, which didn't suit. And, you know, we ended up getting relegated because, you know, of his inability to stop the defence from trying to pass the ball out, you know, from the back. And we got caught so many times. We even got caught again last week against St. Pat's when Conan Byrne scored a goal, which was, you know, as a direct result of a short pass being played by the central defender. As I said, we're back to Marcus Field now with fantastic training ground out in Kilmallock as well. There's money being pumped into the club. There's scouts. We've brought in some absolutely superb players. Bastian Ari, who's superb. Like, I mean, the Dublin clubs and Dundalk and even Cork would be looking at him during the break, and they'll be wondering, can they recruit him?
Because I've seen him twice playing at lacrosse this season. I thought he was fantastic.
He's absolutely running games. He really is. And then there's Rodrigo Tossi, you know, who just seemed to come out of nowhere. It was like a spaceship landed in Limerick, and, you know, he's been absolutely fantastic. He's Limerick's Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He's Limerick's Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He's, you know, he's not the most mobile, but he creates chances for himself, you know, out of nothing. You know, he did it in Turner's Cross against Cork in the FAI Cup semi-final. There's a real great spine to the team now. There's, you know, Brendan Clark in goals, you know, Shane Tracy playing full-back. Then we've Shane Duggan and Lee Lynch in midfield. Lee Lynch has been an absolute revelation for me this season, an absolute superb player. And then we have Ogbene, who we got from Cork. In my time watching Limerick, he's the best player I've seen in a Limerick shirt. And that's just based on one season. He's got so much potential. And I just worry that we might lose him, you know. We might lose him because other clubs are going to be looking at him because he's got real potential. He could go on and play in England, you know, maybe in the Championship. He's that good. So I think it's, you know, we're still suffering from the Martin O'Neill regime. Neil MacDonald has come in and he settled us a bit, but we're still in that relegation battle. You know, we've got Drogheda now coming up on Saturday, and we've Galway the week after. Get 6 points from those two games and we're fine, because we'll struggle going to Shamrock Rovers in the last day of the season. But, you know, if we can just get, you know, 4 or 6 points out of those two games, we'll stay up. And Limerick deserves to stay up because it's a great club, great volunteerism involved, great fans. You know, with superb ground now, with potential for expansion. And it's all going in an upward trajectory for Limerick, but we do need to stay in the Premier Division, because if we go down, it's going to be a long haul to get back up with the reduced numbers in promotion. So,
of course, two teams that are on the up. We mentioned Waterford there, we'll come back to them. Cove Ramblers, Mikey, again, another side in the south of Ireland that are making great strides. Stephen mentioned Henderson's tweet, and the fairness to Henderson, has been doing a lot, and likes a Red FM are doing a lot of promote. Cove Ramblers here in Cork. But is it sometimes, are they fighting losing battles, these teams that are trying to make a breakthrough, come through that glass ceiling? Or wouldn't it be just fantastic if you had four Munster teams in the top tier of the Irish football in the next two or three seasons?
Yeah, the Cove thing, Waterford got a huge investment this year. They invested in an awful lot of players. They're as good as most of the Premier clubs this year, and they had probably the Division 1-1 halfway through the year. But the change that was made to allow only one team to be promoted and three teams be relegated absolutely ruined Cove's season. So you're talking there was only a few hundred at the last game against one of their biggest games of the season, but there was nothing to play for, you know, and there was nothing to play from very early on. So how do you get people in? Like, you look at that, and like the goal that was scored by Dave Hurley that day deserved to grace any TV screen across the country. It was absolutely unbelievable. So that again comes back to the investment in the game and the promotion of the game and getting it, I believe, wrong. Next year is going to be tough for Cove. You have three premier clubs coming down, three of six or seven that we're just looking at there. Three kind of well-established clubs are going to be coming down and fighting and vying for promotion, with Cove, who don't have the biggest investment, who don't have the biggest catchment area, but who are doing a mighty fine job of what they have. And I think the proof is in the movement of their players from the under 17 setup through to the under 19 setup, and it seems to be seamless into their senior setup.
Yeah, and I'd be disappointed with the decision to drop three players out or three teams out of the Premier League as well, because I think one really important thing for the League of Ireland is that it stays in the regions across Ireland. And if you look at the teams in the relegation spots now, you have Galway in the west, Finn Harps in the northwest, Drogheda as well, Sligo are right there too. And I suppose the one good thing at least is you do have Waterford coming up, and they have the investment. I think it was Lee Power who came in as chairman, and he's a former player. He's chairman of Swindon as well. They seem to be doing a good job there. They've recruited well. I know they brought in Kenny Brown. They managed to grab him from Cork City at the last minute. They got in Paddy Barrett from Dundalk, Marco Sullivan again from Cork City. They brought in Aaron Drynan, who's a Cork City youth player. He was in the UEFA Youth League with City, and he seems to be going across to Ipswich now. So Waterford definitely seem to be on the up, which is a great thing.
Absolutely, and congratulations to Waterford on their terrific season.
We're going to move on and talk about a different Munster now, and Munster in the Champions Cup, which begins this weekend. Steve, Johan Vergran, 37-year-old coach, who was a forwards coach with the Springboks, has come on board, will arrive in Ireland in November, and assume responsibilities from Razzie Erasmus. Did you make of that news this week?
Well, I didn't know a lot about him, but then again, nobody really knew a lot about him, given that he was, I suppose, in the background of the Springboks, but he seems to be well received. I mean, Springbok rugby seems to not be particularly happy to have let him go, so that's a good sign. And I mean, on the broader point, I suppose, is at least it puts the folks back on the field, because there has been, I suppose, it's inevitably been a bit of a sideshow when we all knew Erasmus was leaving. And the focus kind of is deflected away from the field then, and I suppose at least Munster can go into Europe knowing that they have a new coach. Maybe you'll have that bounce as well, where they have the idea of the new coach is, I know he'll be somewhere in the world watching the TV, but he will be in the stands later in the season, and there is someone to impress there to keep a place in the team. So, I mean, it's a good news story from that point of view, but I mean, as far as Van Gran is concerned, I suppose only time will tell how much he brings to it, given that it is his first head coaching role too.
Mikey, he's very highly regarded. Of course, he had a really positive spell with the Bulls in the Super Rugby as well. So there's a huge clamour now for Munster to kick on, having built a bit on Erasmus's season last year. And he's going to be around to help smooth the transition. What can they expect? What can Munster supporters expect this year? They're in the Champions Cup Pool 4 with the likes of Cast, Leicester and Racing. It's a tricky group.
Yeah, no, it's very similar actually to the group that I had last year's competition. Look, I think we saw the game last weekend against Leinster. I don't think they were still firing on all cylinders, but there was signs that they're playing, I won't say a more expansive style, but there's definitely a bit more variety in the game than what they brought to their campaign last year. Again, being brought through by Erasmus. It is a shame to see him going. I thought he, during the Axel Foley thing last year, and the sad passing of Axel, that he represented Munster incredibly well throughout the whole thing. And he spoke with dignity, and he understood the situation, and he just seemed to get the Munster culture. And that is a vital thing with when you're talking to Munster. This Munster culture thing takes on a whole life of its own, but it is nearly a tangible asset to Munster. You saw Reggie Corrigan last week question Peter O'Mahony on commitment of the players, and Peter O'Mahony just stopped. You know, it was one of the most awkward few minutes of live TV you'll get. But he questioned the commitment of Munster players, and some other. If you do in soccer or GA, you'll get a response, but that was something you just don't question. Erasmus seemed to get that, so it'll be very interesting. The transition period to Van Gaan will be crucial. I think they'll have two games played and a number of other Pro 14 games played before he takes control. If he can come in and hit the ground running, and hopefully Munster over the next their first two games in the Champions Cup, which are against the two French clubs, I believe, if they can pick up definitely an away losing bonus point and a win at home, It steads them in good fashion. I think they'll obviously be going out to look for two wins, and are more than capable with the quality that they have of getting those two wins with their full strength team on the pitch. And I know Zeebo is back now again this weekend. I think they went out last weekend and they kind of played. There was three playmakers there. It was a worthwhile exercise, given that it was the week before. And you have to try these things because you just never know with injuries and suspensions what way it's going to come out for you. But look, I think you'll definitely be looking for progression in the Champions Cup and to be there or thereabouts at the end of the year come to Pro 14.
Steve, in Pool 1, you've Harlequins, La Rochelle, Ulster and Wasps, and the other Irish team obviously involved in the primary European tournament, Leinster with Exeter, Glasgow and Montpellier. Of the Irish teams, of those three particular teams involved in the Champions Cup, is there any particular one of the three that you could see really making inroads in the competition this year?
Well, I suppose when you're looking at the groups, you maybe look at Leinster's group is still tough, but there might be a slightly easier pathway there. I suppose the great thing for Munster is they came through a very similar pool last year and were very impressive, but it's hard to see Racing bring so little to it as they did last year, so it will be very tough for them to get through. But I suppose like last year, Munster and Leinster both impressed, but ultimately came up against really strong forces in the semi-finals, and it's going to be a huge task to try and, I suppose, topple the giants that are there with Saracens in particular. But probably Leinster did go closest of all last year, so they will have a good shot.
Yeah, look, and just I actually think out of the three Irish teams in the Champions Cup, I'd expect an awful lot from, again, Munster and Leinster. Are they good enough? I don't believe to win it. I don't believe so. But again, you'll be looking to get to the semi-final and go from there.
Excellent stuff. My many thanks to Mikey Sheehan, Stephen Barry and Rob McNamara for today's contributions to Paper Talk Extra. We'll be back again next week. Have a great weekend.